You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
Let's welcome Dr. Radhika Mahes. She has made significant contributions to education, advocacy, and history as a senior lecturer in history at the College of Science, Technology, and Applied Arts of Trinidad and Tobago. She has fostered critical thinking and historical analysis, and her work with Support Autism TNT has been pivotal in making therapeutic and educational support accessible to children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Her writings as a columnist for the Trinidad and Tobago Guardian have been a hallmark for her academic rigor and societal impact, aiming to enlighten and engage a diverse leadership. So that is just a brief bio on Dr. Mahes. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM.
And thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. So I think this is a good space to start. What is autism, and what made you decide to go into this sphere of advocacy for the, I don't even want to call it a disease, but yeah, so, for this condition?
Let me start right there. It's not a disease. It is a neurodevelopmental issue where the brain develops and processes information differently. Okay? So it affects certain areas of development. So the first one is communication. A lot of our autistic persons, both children and adults, they may not be able to communicate verbally. Now, that said, it does not mean that they cannot communicate at all. They still manage to communicate by gestures and different things, but they may not be able to communicate verbally. Another one is social interaction. So they may not, little children may not play with other little children as we expect them to, you know, or they may not play with a toy as we expect them to. So, for example, a three-year-old might just spin the wheel of a truck, a toy truck, over and over and over, rather than trying to play with it as a neurotypical child would play with it. Then we also have where it affects behavior and sensory processing. So many of the persons on the autism spectrum, they may have issues with sound and light and touch and texture and so on. Some of them might display repetitive behavior, you know, flapping on of hands, doing things, the same things over and over. And I must point out that it's called a spectrum because it looks different in every person, literally. Every person on the autism spectrum will display these things that I mentioned to different level. So on the one hand, we have autistic children who will communicate and speak better than you and I, and who would pick up other languages very quickly from just looking at a YouTube video. But then on the other end of the spectrum, there are those who may not be able to do that. But then there are those who may not speak verbally, but they socialize, or they have no problems with sound and light and so on. So it really and truly depends on the individual child. You know, we keep saying that every child is different. When it comes to autism, we really and truly see that.
So first, I want to go back a little bit to, you mentioned neurotypical. Can you define what a neurotypical child is, and neurodivergence, and where does autism fit on the definitions?
So neurotypical refers to what we call a normal child, you know, a child who develops in terms of language and communication and interaction and social behavior and so on. So I personally think that using the word normal gives, you know, sometimes I wonder how many of us are really normal. So I don't really like using the word normal, but neurotypical refers to that. Neurodivergent is anyone on a wide spectrum of issues who do not develop as is required to, you know, who have not met the milestones that a neurotypical child is expected to meet. And you see, our society is designed in such a way that we expect X, Y, and Z from a child. And once a child does not accomplish X, Y, and Z, we therefore label them as something is wrong with the child, you know, that child need help and so on. So we are still stuck in that black and white space. We're not looking at The fact that, you know, children may not be able to do one thing, but they might do something else excellent or better than a neurotypical child. So that's basically it. Neurotypical, normal, neurodivergent, anything that is not considered normal. Sad to say, you are using the word normal.
Mm-hmm. Can you say that this is a new development in terms of what we see in children? Because there was like a period of time when... how to put this and be politically correct, but Down syndrome was a scare, and not many people understood what was the cause of it. And then there was a lot of development and research into that, and it was found to be in terms of chromosomes and DNA, etc. Yeah. Is that same research being done in terms of autism? Seeing it seems to be like a new thing lately.
So it's actually not a new thing. It has always been around.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is now that there is so much more information out there about it, that parents are now recognizing signs of delayed development in their children, and they're taking steps to, you know, get their child diagnosed and to get the proper help for their child. So it's not exactly that it's a new thing. And I just want to go back to where you asked me why I started Support Autism TNT. Mm-hmm. I started it because of my nephew Raul. Raul is 21 years old. He'll be 22 this year. So just to tell you how far back it goes, I started it because when he was growing up, I'm one of his primary caregivers, and when he was growing up, we recognized the signs from as early as 2 years, because he was, certain words that he's supposed to say, by the time he's 2 years, he was not communicating in that way that was expected of him. So we recognized it early. But when Raul was growing up, there was still that time where we would talk. A lot of people would say to us, well, you know, boys take longer to talk, you don't need to worry about him. Mm-hmm. So we were still in that period. We tried to get him diagnosed, and I did not get him diagnosed till he was almost 8 years old, because I didn't know where to go. We didn't know who to turn to. Nobody could tell us anything about it. I remember going to the Mount Hope Children's Hospital, pediatric clinic, to make an appointment, and I got an appointment for 18 months later. Then it was the same thing with schools. We tried to get him into preschools and primary schools, and we were turned down by 6 schools. So we resorted to homeschooling him. So those were the kind of issues that we faced when he was growing up. And in the process of running around looking for help for him and trying to figure it out, I met so many other parents who were in the same situation. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody could tell us what to do or where to get help or how to go about diagnosing our children or which school could work with him, with them. So that's why I started the NGO. I also, when I started it, the main thing, the NGO turned 11 years last month, actually. Mm-hmm. So we've been around for 11 years. And when I started it, my main concern was him. I know that parents were saying that they needed assistance and all that, but my main concern was to make sure that he had a space and he had things that he can do. So the main goal of Support Autism TNT was to create opportunities for persons on the autism spectrum. And initially, we started doing that by organizing events. You know, we started things like Autism Fun Day, Autism Christmas Party, Autism Camp, Summer Camp, lots of things directed especially to them. And it wasn't just events that were modeled along what neurotypical children would attend. It was sensory-friendly events, so no noise, because, again, Raul was my template. You know, we walk into a space and he automatically put his hands on his ears. So we know right away that, okay, it's too loud for him. He will start squinting, so we know the lights are too bright. So when I started events, I used him as the model, and we created events that, you know, the kids will come and they would actually enjoy. They had lots of sensory-friendly crafts, for example, activities, because he would not go into a bouncy castle. So yes, we would have the bouncy castle for those kids who could, but then we had other things for them to do. So that's where the whole idea came from. And Raul was growing up at a time where we didn't have much, but as awareness grew, as people realize that there's this thing called autism out there, parents started bringing their children out more. parents started doing things, creating opportunities themselves. There's a proliferation of schools all over Trinidad now that caters for them. So we have come a long way in the last 21 years.
So let's get to some of the signs and symptoms of autism, and what are some of the things that parents can do to recognize that this is really that and not something else, to kind of calm the panic a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, there are signs of development or milestones that every child is supposed to, that we expect every child to reach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the earliest signs probably are around 1 year to 2 years old, where things like they don't make eye contact. If you call their names and they're not responding, they're not looking at you. Delayed speech is the most visible sign. You know, some of them might start off with words and then they lose their words by the time they reach toddler age. Things like they're in their own little corner, seeming oblivious to the rest of the world, not playing with kids. You know, the stimming or rocking back and forth, flapping their hands. Some of the kids might also walk on their toes. So these are the kind of things that we look for. The speech, as I said, is a very, very important one, because most parents are able to say, okay, at 2 years old, my child is not saying any words. Something is there. There's definitely a delay there. The repetitive movement is also a very visible one. The flapping and the rocking back and forth, lining up toys in a straight line, not playing with toys as they are expected to play. And then the sensory differences. You must know from the time your child start avoiding eating certain foods. They're not picky eaters because they're just being, you know, troublesome toddlers. They really cannot eat the food because of the textures and so on. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. As they get older, you can recognize it by, you know, struggle with social interaction. Yeah, they don't have friends. They don't know how to interact in a group. They become very anxious. They get meltdowns more. So those are the things we're talking about. Sensory overload. Can't handle the noise and crowds and lights. Mm-hmm. So it's really a range of things. And I want to say again that every child develops differently. So not every child would display all these symptoms.
Right.
Yeah.
And some of these symptoms doesn't necessarily mean that they're on the autism spectrum. It can be other delayed deficiencies.
It could be global delay. It could be some other form of developmental delay. That is why it's very important to get a child diagnosed, so that you know exactly what it is that you have to, you know, what are their challenges and how you can address it.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of misconceptions about autism, what is it not? Because you don't want to send, you know, parents into panic thinking, okay, that means I'll have to take care of this child for the rest of their life. They wouldn't be able to function as adults. What are some of the misconceptions?
So that's the first important thing that you said right there. Not because a child is on the autism spectrum means that a child cannot develop and cannot take part and participate and do things. That is the first thing. A lot of parents that I'm seeing now, they worry. And they think that, okay, if my child is autistic, therefore my child should not do X, Y, and Z. And that way they limit the children. Mm-hmm. So it basically, you have to give them a chance to develop what they are good at, what their talents are, and let it flourish. You can't keep them back and you can't say that, okay, I'm not going to discipline my child because the child is autistic. Or if the child is throwing a tantrum because they're not getting their way, you give in to them because they're autistic. So it is not that they cannot function and contribute to society. That's one. Mm-hmm. It's not a mental disorder and means that they have to be locked away and medicated for the rest of their life. That's the second one. And two, it's not a child being hardened and just trying to be own way, and therefore you can't teach them or anything like that. That those are the main ones that we see in Trinidad and Tobago. We also see the one where society believes that, you know, these children are not supposed to be out and about. When they're out in the mall and they may have a meltdown or a tantrum, people say things to parents about them. Why don't you keep your child home? Why don't you discipline your child? Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that we need to get rid of as a society.
And in terms of the most frequently asked questions by parents to you and persons who are in your association, what are some of the concerns, real concerns that they have?
The main one that we see with new parents, especially, you know, a parent, not just parent, teachers, we have neighbors, we have grandparents might call and say, well, you know, I think my child have autism because I'm seeing he's not saying words and so on. What do I do? Mm-hmm. That's the one that we get most regularly. And what we advise them to do is to get the child diagnosed early. In order to get your child diagnosed, you can do it in two ways. You can go to one of the pediatric clinics and you can make an appointment. Sadly, the waiting period right now is all the way to 2027 for an appointment. But if you can't afford it, you could go privately. It costs anything between $2,500 to $5,000, $6,000. But the first thing is to diagnose your child, and your child should be diagnosed by a development pediatrician. You know, we have parents who are saying that, you know, I'm taking my child to a psychologist and I'm taking my child to a therapist and so on. But even they need to get that official diagnosis from the development pediatrician. So that's the first question that we get a lot. The second thing that we are bombarded by with parents is how to educate, you know, help me find a school for my child. And I mentioned earlier that there are lots of schools, there have been a lot of schools all over Trinidad, but it doesn't mean that they're willing to work with the children, sadly. A lot of the schools, it's a business for them. In fact, autism is a business across the board.
The thing is, I was going to tackle the education part of it
later on,
because I know that is a huge chunk, because it's a whole mindset that you have to tap into, where children with disabilities on a whole needs to be treated. But just to go back to the assessment, can you tell us a little bit of what the assessment would look like?
So when the child goes to, when you take the child to development pediatrician, they would look at different things. You know, they spend a lot of time talking to the parents about their concerns, you know, from way back to the pregnancy stage, how the child developed. Then they would also screen the children themselves to see their routines, you know, how what they're saying, what they're doing, how they're interacting. So it's a very intense assessment. Sometimes it doesn't happen in one visit, you know, sometimes they'll have to go back for a few visits because pediatricians normally want to make sure. But yeah, it's a very detailed history into the child, the parents, what can be done, what the child have been doing and have not been doing. And it takes a period of time to get a full diagnosis, a full assessment.
And here's one that maybe a parent is asking now, am I feeding my child the right thing? And if I feed my child something else and not another, would I be able to reverse the effects of autism?
So autism cannot be reversed. It's a lifelong condition. It is a condition that your child is going to have for the rest of their life. But I don't want it to sound like, you know, you have to panic about that. What it means is that that condition is not going to go away, but you can help your child deal with the challenges that comes with having that condition. So the various therapies, for example, behavioral therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, they can help your child in whatever way they need help. And that's why the one-on-one interaction with therapists is so important, and even in the school system to get that extra attention is so important, because you need to in all cases you need to recognize what are the challenges your specific child is faced with, and you need to develop a plan to deal with those challenges. So if one child is speech and the child is only saying words but have problems with communication, then the child can get help to address that. If a child is having behavioral issues, as we see with a lot of the older kids, when they turn teenage years, it's very difficult for them. So we see the behavioral problems coming in. We see where they would want to scratch and hit, lash out and so on, because they just can't communicate how they are feeling. So it's very important to understand your child's challenge, individual challenge. And to, you know, you can do your research. If you can afford it, you can get the therapy. You can talk. We have a parent support group with more than 300 parents, a WhatsApp group. You can find out from other parents how, you know, they're dealing with those challenges. It's not the same for every child. So one child, for example, might eat everything. Another child, like my nephew, I can count the amount of things he eats on one hand. And I said he's 21 years old. So it really and truly for the parents and caregivers to figure out what works for their children. The same thing with meltdown. You know, you have to know your child and you have to know how to calm them down and you have to know what works for he or she.
All right, so I'm going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll head to education and how Trinidad and Tobago has adapted and how probably they still need to adapt as it pertains to autism and other spectrum blessings. I'm going to call it that, yeah. All right, so if you have any questions, you could send them to 3061065. And of course, your calls, we'll take a few right after this break.
Tune in to Betterments with Old Space, Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for a program that educates and is solution-based. Space tackles the issues that matter to you, providing a platform to speak your mind and find solutions. That's Betterments with Space, with a focus on education and resolution. This is all about making things better for you. You can reach us via phone and WhatsApp to share your thoughts and find solutions to the issues that matter to you. So if you want to make a difference and have your voice heard, tune into Freedom 106.5 FM and join us for Betterments with Bass Monday through Thursday from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Better for you, only on Freedom 106.5 FM, where we believe that your voice matters. Power up your Saturdays with Gary V's electrifying energy on Speak Your Mind Saturdays. Here you're not just tuning in, you're transforming the show into a vibrant tapestry of opinions, laughter and spirited debates. Get set for a day packed with the fun, the burning issues, and Carrie V's infectious personality. Join the fun, fuel the conversation, speak your mind. Saturdays with Carrie V on Freedom 106.5 FM. This is the human impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. Speak your mind.
All right, welcome back, TNT. And the topic for this morning with our guest, Dr. Radhika Mahes, autism. How do you recognize it? What are the options available to you, resources as well? And she just went into a few. We want to focus mainly on education for a moment, but let's answer this question coming in at 3061065. Good morning, Tuska, and to your guest. Please ask her, what is the cause of autism? And before we do that, let's just take another question via our phone calls. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Miss Tuska.
Good morning.
Good morning to your honored guest, Miss Mahes. I just wanted to ask Miss Mahes to commend her too for the excellent work she has been doing for these children in our society over the years, and to ask her that we have to join the lobby for legislation. I see a lot of the problems disabled citizens face throughout the country can be traced to a lack of legislation that would drive public behavior, public decision-making, policies and programs, et cetera, et cetera. And until we don't have legislation, so when you go to a public facility, the employees, they are guided not by their conscience or goodwill or how they feel on that particular day, but they will be required by law to deliver services to citizens who have, well, whatever kind of disability, and that is a problem we are having. So I would want to hear her thoughts on that and how she can join, you know, in the lobby to have legislation to protect and promote the rights, because services and etc., these are not favors. These are rights that belong to our citizens who have found themselves with one kind of disability or next. So thank you very much, Ms. Mahes, for your work. Thank you, Princess Tom.
Thank you, Princess Tom, for your call. So let's go first to what causes autism, and then we'll step into how education is looking at children with autism.
So for the causes, there have been so much research being done all over the world trying to figure that out, actually, trying to find out what is the cause of autism. Research have pointed to environmental factors. Some researchers have pointed to biological factors. Some have said genetic factors. But there's no one specific cause that have been identified as yet. So that is something that is ongoing. I really hope that, you know, in the near future, sooner rather than later, we will actually know what it is, the actual cause, so we can address that. And you know, we could be able to help. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's it for now. It's an ongoing research.
All right. And in terms of education, how far has the education system come in recognizing that this is a developmental issue for children in Trinidad and Tobago and would impact on how they are taught? Has there been any discussion by the Ministry of Education to recognize that?
So I think it, autism and other special needs are recognized in our education system by the ministry, but whether it is enough is being done to address it is a whole different issue. Mm. Now, that said, we need to start with early identification. So children need to be screened from very young, because from the ECC level, we see where children are slipping through the cracks. You know, we see where teachers think that these children are just hardened, they're just hyper, you know, they just don't want to learn. Mm-hmm. I have been hearing so much parents who had to take their children out of preschool and primary school because the teachers just don't understand them. There are schools that tell teachers and parents outright that you need to take your child out. So we need to start with that early identification and support. And it's really my hope that the Ministry of Education will embark on that as a project soon. The other thing is teachers. Now, we need teacher training. We're not lacking in teachers, you know. The University of Trinidad and Tobago produces graduates with a degree in special needs education every single year. But they are not being employed by the Ministry of Education. And that is the problem there, because when you have a school and you have an autistic child or two in that school and you have no teachers who train in special needs education, then obviously you're going to have teachers who say, we can't deal with this child being hard and this child is
being disruptive.
Class,
yeah. And then so, you have the teachers who deal with 30 odd children on a day-to-day basis.
It. Yeah, and it's very difficult for a teacher who have a class of 20 to 30 children to give a little bit of individual attention to a child. So that's a problem right there. We need those teachers who are graduating from UTT to be employed. I think that every single school should have a special needs teacher, whether it's primary, secondary, ECCA center. The second thing is there are children who are capable of being in a public school, but they may need a little extra help, so they will need the aid. We have not been allocating aid since the last 4 or 5 years. Many of the aides were working with children, their contracts ended and the children were just left there on their own. Mm. So, you know, again, it's not a matter of not knowing that these children need help. It's a matter of providing the help for them. I think the Ministry of Education is very well aware. I mean, we have Student Support Division. I am assuming that they collect data on the amount of children with special needs in the school. And it's now to implement the extra support systems that these children need, because listen, a private school costs anything from $3,000 to $8,000 a term. Mm. The minute you have to send your child to a school and that is the cost, it leads to a big disadvantage for those from lower income groups, those from very rural areas, those from single parents home. So because we are not providing the kind of education that that should be done in all the government schools, a lot of children are being left out completely. And they are at home. I mean, from the time they hit 10 and 11 and schools can no longer deal with them, that's it. They're at home. So it's very, very unfair that parents have to, you know, really try to budget properly to take their child to a private school, and in the case when they can't, the child remains at home behind closed door, nothing is done, the child gets no kind of intervention. And all it takes from us is a more concerted effort to train our teachers properly, to put special needs teachers in the school, to put some kind of support staff in the school so that they can get things like speech and occupational therapy within the school system. And, you know, reasonable accommodations. We have it at SEA level where they can get some concessions to help them. But how many children actually reach SEA level?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many are forced to drop out because our entire system does not cater for differential learning. It's a standardized curriculum. It's a standardized method of testing. Mm-hmm. If you can't keep up, that's the end of you. you label as Donsey head, and you know, you told that you can't learn and you would never reach far in life, and then a child has to deal with all those things as well.
And then the eventual reliance on assistance and those things as you grow up and become an adult, if it is you're not employed, etc. It's a whole cycle that begins right there.
Yeah, and that's a whole different topic. You see, we have no idea and we have no consideration for adults, autistic adults in this country.
Well, my next question would have been how we deal with adults with autism in the workplace and, you know, further in life.
But go ahead. First to begin, they cannot even get jobs. You know, last year, at the beginning, very first week in December, we support autism, TNG collaborated with IDFEC to host a seminar online, a Zoom seminar on employment and autism. And, you know, we had parents, we have the information basically from our database of all those children who grew up to be adults, my nephew included, who's many of whom did their CSEC and passed their CSEC, but nobody wants to employ them. Because the minute you hear disability, employers automatically think, okay, he can't work, one. Two, we'll have to spend too much time training them and we'll have to watch them all the time. And that is the general attitude we have towards
more liability.
Yeah, it's more liability than anything. We forget that they have unique skills. You know, they're so... They pay so much attention to detail that they can bring so much benefit to your work, much more than your so-called normal employee. But we are so set in this social way of thinking where we think that once it's a disability, that's the end of it. You know, we can't employ them. We shouldn't employ them. It's too much work to take them in. So when it comes to being an adult, we pay no attention to autistic adults in this country. And that needs to change at some point.
Got some voice notes and calls coming in. We will take your calls in a couple of minutes. Let's introduce this voice note. Good morning. But
just to go back to the...
Hi, morning, Tosca. Calling from Pitti Valley. I had an experience. My son, when he was about 8 years old, I had him assessed because when he moved from preschool and he went into a primary school, after the first year, second year, and he went into first standard, they call first standard anyway, grade one, whatever it is. Teacher said that, you know, he couldn't spell his name and so forth. So I had him assessed. And yeah, coming out of the assessment, they said, no, nothing is wrong with him. He basically is in line with the education in the States, which is like about a year behind. And actually, he is one who has just a poor attention span. A matter of fact, he couldn't spell, but he could memorize very well, and he actually did very good, like computers, etc. And he actually, I put him into a private prep school in Sinclair. He did very well. From there he went to Briggs. He didn't do well in SEA. He went to Digger Martin second junior sec, and he was transferred to a secondary school, St. James. And he was going okay until, of course, he got distracted with the linemen and so forth. But that is not a sign of autism. It's just that he was just a little slow. Well, not very slow, but necessarily that. But his talents were elsewhere. And that is something, you know, we keep talking about where people are more mechanically or mentally inclined than the, what we call
academic.
The maths and arithmetic. And English. Okay, take care.
Thank you so much for your contribution.
Just to continue, actually, the teacher, and I knew the principal personally of that, and it was a private school in Port of Spain, told me that I need to take the child out to the school. Well, after Adam assessed, the psychologist told me, hey, what, you need to move him from there. I got him into another school, and when he got a little too old for there, then he got into Briggs, where he excelled. He was actually, he got awards and stuff. Unfortunately, like I said, he didn't do very well in the SEA, but he was, if you want to call it the head boy in the school, he was about a year older than most of the other children and taller as well. All right, and then he went on to do very well, actually. His handwriting was terrible, but he ended up doing tattooing, and when he did tattooing, freehand, his creative talents were excellent, and even the The writing and stuff that he had to do when he started tattooing was, I mean, fantastic. You would never think he would have a problem with his handwriting, which he still had. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for your contribution. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Oscar, again.
Good morning.
All right, we're on a topic this time. All right, you know the joining a topic here. I have a personal experience today because what happened now? I have 3 sons, and what happened is, well, the families are very fast academic families. So when we saw the last guy, I saw he had the repeat first year, somewhere down the wrong. So I didn't take it on every guy's leg, normal. But what happened? After the COVID, and he was home for the year and something, we discovered that he had a learning disability, and we didn't really pick it up before. Eh? So they tried to supply us a special aid teacher that lasted a while. And from there, well, he's, he'll be 13 just now. He didn't get the, he didn't get into the, well, he couldn't keep up with the pace of the Trinidad system where he's taking his commercial thing. So right now, I'm in the process of school. Well, I had a special tutor doing them a while ago before what happened there. That special tutor was a private, and then she didn't have much regular. So I find that when he away, he wasn't going as, how I was now. So I arranged one to get in there in, as early as next month here. So what happening there is, special needs, as the lady said, they're starting at 5,000 at term. And what I want to say that the Ministry of Education not organized. And now, education is a very expensive thing. Well, this is not really, let's say schooling and preparing people for society is a very expensive thing. Eh? And let us face it, the Treasury is not able to maintain it in the way we'd like it to be maintained. Eh? Any special needs, now that's special. So all who have special needs children, you in the bamboo, they either fight up with the private tutors who price their socks up a ton, or that is it there for you. You know? That is the stark reality. Right? The stark reality is the only ministry of education have the aid, teacher aid. But that system is a good idea, but having the children in the same class here, that children, that wasn't working out too well. My personal experience with it worked to a point, but it kind of had that extraction. So it is a real challenge for all of us in society ministry and the authority that be, but then say, we will have special needs people. We had before, we'll have those children coming up, and we'll have to find some way in which to treat with it in a meaningful way. But for the time being right now, we are zero in that area.
Thank you so much, Fast Track. What say you, Dr. Mahes?
Ooh, I agree completely. It's basically the same experience of most parents out there. If they cannot afford the private school, you are literally, you're totally lost. You don't know what to do. You don't know how to get the help that your child need. And it's very difficult to sit down as a parent or a caregiver and know that your child need help and you cannot access it, you know. Mm-hmm. That is probably the most mentally draining thing for a parent, trying to help your child. And
heartbreaking.
I must give credit to parents there, because parents and caregivers have learned to be educators, they have learned to be doctors, they have learned to be therapists, they learn to do everything on their own. We have so many parents who, you know, they go online and they do whatever short courses are being offered and so on, because they want to learn how to help their child. And it takes a lot from them, and many of them are trying the best that they can. Imagine what a little bit of support from the state would do. It would go a long way.
Well, Dr. Mahes, we've got a couple more minutes to 10 o'clock, so what I'm going to do is take another break, and when we come back on the other side of 10 o'clock, because there are a couple of other questions via our WhatsApp number and, of course, phone calls with persons who have questions. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is The Human Impact. So welcome back. Quickly, let's get some messages in here. First off, special recognition to Dr. Mahes. She has been one of the strongest proponents for our kids on education. We need to regulate these private schools. They are extremely expensive and often without proper instructors or facilities. Secondly, is the issue of therapy in Trinidad. Again, this is super expensive, and only those with the finances can seek help for their kids. We spend just under $2,000 per week on supports. Not only that, you need a recommendation letter. It's almost a closed off sector. Another message here says, it's not that simple, Tusker. Our secondary schools are not equipped to handle these students. We only have one counselor to 5 schools in Port of Spain. Teachers aren't trained for this. My school recently had a case with a boy like this. He had aggression issues and was beating up other students. The mother was pulling strings within the ministry. I'm not going to make that comment. And even went as far as the press to gain sympathy. Student support system said he ain't going nowhere, but it was all lip service. He eventually knocked down the two teachers. The last one, a female, was the final straw. They had to keep him at home for two terms. Eventually, he got transferred. The stubbornness of the parent was a disservice to her own child. So that's just some of the circumstances that parents, and I would think teachers as well, have to deal with that situation. So in your opinion, what would be some of the things that obviously need to be paid attention to as education is concerned? And also, I have to remember, we have to discuss adults as well and the workplace.
So for education, I think one of the first thing that we need to do is use all those UTT graduates who are coming out with a degree in specialized education, start employing them, start putting them in our schools. It would make a big difference when we have qualified teachers who know about disabilities and who have learned how to work with children with disabilities. That would be the first thing. The second thing that we need to address, and this is a more long-term one, is our entire curriculum. You know, our curriculum and how we teach and how we test. That is something that we, you know, every time SEA comes around and we talk about the stress that the children are under for doing it, when they do SEA exam, we talk about revamping our curriculum, but we do nothing. So that is something that we need to address in a long term. And the third thing, most importantly, is to be able to put the support staff in those schools. So we need, the person who just spoke said they have one guidance counselor for how many schools?
Five schools,
And in addition, we have no speech therapists and no occupational therapists and no behavioral therapists coming out of those schools. So we need to have those kind of support in place. You know, once the support is there, we will see the children thriving. We just need to give them the opportunity. You know, we can't say, okay, they can't learn and we can't teach them and take a child out of the school. We can't do that. That is unfair to the children. And once we put things in place, we would see that they will have equal access to a good quality education.
And further to that, now, once the foundation has been put in place, then adults can be integrated into the workspace. But you also said that many places are not willing to hire. How can you change the mindset of employers as it pertains to persons with special abilities?
So that one will be a little more difficult because we can't force employers, especially, you know, private companies and so on, to hire them. But what we can do is we can pass legislation, which you had mentioned earlier, we can pass legislation so that at least they can get jobs within the public sector. You know, we have now started that conversation here in Trinidad. You know, it's a very slow process. And I am hoping that as more and more people speak out, you know, it just can't be us alone speaking out. As more and more people speak out, other groups speak out, we will be able to get the different stakeholders together and we can talk about what we can do and you know, map out a plan for moving forward.
And finally, someone is asking here, hello, good morning to you guys. I know someone who is autistic. She's almost 4 years old and she does not speak. Can you enlighten me on how her talking condition, on her talking condition? Thank you. So that is tying in with resources as well, but let's see how we can assist.
So the thing with that, I mean, we need to get more information about the child. We can't just simply say that, you know, this is what you can do. It all depends on what level the child is at. So in a situation like that, I will tell the parent to reach out to us. You know, give us a call. Our number is 791-1320. Give us a call. We talk to you more. We see where the child is at. And we'll see how best we can guide you along to get the help that your child need. Yeah, so reach out to us and we can have a conversation about where the child is at and what needs to be done.
And that ties into my next question, financial assistance and grants. Are there real resources available to assist your campaign in helping children with autism and other spectrum disorders? How is it in getting that assistance? Is it difficult? Well, so far I've heard it is difficult. But what can legislators and organizations do to assist in that way?
To assist my NGO, to assist the autistic parents.
Well, I mean, by extension, the parents would be assisted if they assist your NGO. Okay. So
before I talk about the NGO, I just want to say that the Ministry of the People and Social Development do have a special child grant, a special needs child grant. Mm-hmm. It is $1,800 for children under the age of 18, and once they become an adult, it's $2,000. So for parents, we always advise parents to make sure that, you know, if you reach out to them, all the information is on their website, and you can apply for that grant. Other than that grant, there's nothing else really for individual children in terms of accessing financial help. For my NGO, we turned 11 years last month, on the 15th of January. We have not forgotten a cent of fund from the government, but we do our fundraising activities. So we opened Raoul's Clubhouse 4 years ago. It will be turning 4 years next week. We opened Raoul's Clubhouse, which is an autism center located in Twin Walls in San Fernando. My niece, Maya Kirtinanen, her brother is autistic. He's Raoul. She got a grant from the Queen's Commonwealth Trust, a UK organization, to open the center. And after the grant was completed for the 2 years, we continue with fundraiser. So we have our Autism 5K, which will be held on the 18th of April. And we will be welcoming 1,000 participants to that event. The funds raised from our fundraising event, our 5K event, offset the cost at Raoul's Clubhouse. So what we do is we make the therapy and all the intervention programs affordable because we understand how expensive it is. So, for example, our main program is called the STAR program, where we work with the children on a one-on-one basis. It's 4 sessions or 5 sessions for the month. And that is only $600 a month. Those sessions that we offer at that cost, parents will have to pay $300-$400 for that by a therapist or by an individual tutor. So we fundraise to keep the cost down because we want it. Remember, the whole idea of the NGO is to create opportunities for persons on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that means that people from lower income families, from very, very rural area, who are already paying X amount of money for a taxi to bring their child, you know, they can come and they can access it. Through the funds raised, we also offer, we fully fund the children who really and truly cannot afford it. So, yeah, our funds come from fundraising. It comes from normal, middle, small and medium businesses. Mm-hmm. They come on board. We have not gotten the money from big corporate sponsors or from government, and that did not stop us. We know what we have to do, and we do it anyway.
So finally, Dr. Mahes, what advice would you have to anyone who's listening right now that may recognize, you know, what you're saying resonates? What advice do you have for them, and, you know, how to begin the journey?
So, I always say to parents and caregivers, one, don't panic. It is very overwhelming. It is mentally draining. But you know what? You're not alone on this. You need the support, reach out to us. We will put you in touch with our other parents. They will be there to support you along. It could be very difficult financially, but little by little, you will get through and you will be able to help your child. So that's the first thing. Don't panic. The second thing is, don't think that your child cannot develop or will not, you know, that's the end of their life because they have autism. Mm. You would be amazed at how your child will shine and thrive once you focus on them and once you understand them. And the third thing is, don't ever bother with what people say. Whatever people say, that's their business. That's no concern of yours. Let them continue to say whatever. You continue to work with your child. You continue to give your child the attention and love your child unconditionally. And that is all you can do. You are capable of that.
Well, Dr. Mahes, yep. I want to thank you so much for taking time off of your busy schedule and also for Guardian Media, you know, coming in and doing this special one for us. Here's to good luck and continue the good work.
Thank you very much. And thank you for starting this conversation before April. Normally, everybody focused on it for April when it's Autism Awareness Month. But I'm so happy to know that we're having this conversation early. So thank you so very much.
No problem. Take care. And when it comes closer to the date, we will do another one again.
Thank you. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.